So it's no big deal to understand that if you name people, there were probably several of them, and that if they're all supposed to be the brothers of Jesus, what it means is this. Up until recently, families all lived together. Parents, grandparents, children, aunts, uncles, cousins, everybody lived together. They all had a farm together. They needed the family to be together to work the farm. And if you got married, you might go out and build yourself a little house in the corner of the farm somewhere, but you always came home in the evening for the meal with everybody. And the grandfather was the head of the whole family. Everybody else listened to the grandfather. He was the patriarch. Did you have a system like this here in Malaysia in past generations, where families lived together, all together in one home, in one area? Right. Even in Chicago, where I grew up, when I was little, my whole family lived in the same neighborhood. We had different houses, except one house had three houses of the family together. But everybody lived together, and on Sundays, we all ate Sunday dinner together. Because of jobs, we tended to move to other parts of the country. But we're still one family. And I consider some of my cousins to be closer to me than some of my brothers. I have six younger brothers. One of my cousins, one of my boy cousins, is closer to me. I can talk to him better than my cousin, my own brothers. He is like a brother to me. So we can't get hung up on when it says Jesus' brothers. It means his family members. And Jesus lived in a family like any other family, with a whole group of relatives all living in the same area, maybe even in the same house. The church has always taught that Jesus is the only son of Mary, and that he is the son of God the Father. And it would have made no sense for God, first of all, to preserve Mary free from original sin, then to keep her a virgin before and during the birth of Jesus, and then let her go and do whatever she wanted afterward. It would make no sense to keep Mary holy and special for Jesus and then have other children afterwards. Also, if Jesus had brothers and sisters, then why did Jesus say on the cross to Mary, "There is your son," and point to John, the disciple? He would have given her into the care of the rest of the family. So obviously there was only one child, Jesus. And when he died, he gave his mother over to the care of somebody else, John the disciple. The virgin birth is a reminder to us, the church, that we are called to be like a virgin. We are called to be holy and pure and spotless. And we often are not. And one of the wonderful things in the church is, if you have lost your physical virginity because of sin, if you are not married and you've had sex before marriage, you can go to confession. And God in his grace will restore your soul to its virginity in a spiritual sense. That you are once again whole and entire before God. And the church constantly asks God to restore its virginity, to make us holy and spotless and complete, untouched, pure. So when we celebrate the virgin birth of Jesus on Christmas, that's the celebration of the virgin birth on Christmas Day, we're all reminded of our own innocence as children. Christmas is a feast for children who are pure, who are innocent. Adults, we don't enjoy Christmas that much. You know why? Because we're all caught up in the sinful society of consumerism, buying and selling. We're all caught up in the externals. Children simply wait for it to happen, and every year it happens for them. They are innocent. They are virginal. They are pure. They enjoy Christmas the best of all. We should never grow up in that sense. We should always remain innocent children. That's why Jesus says, "Unless you become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." Unless you are holy and innocent and pure, you will never go to heaven. The next doctrine about Mary is her divine motherhood. It's connected to the virgin birth. And we celebrate this feast the week after, 8 days after Christmas, on January the 1st, which is the solemnity of Mary, the Mother of God. This is an important thing, because people will sometimes ask us, why do you say that Mary is the Mother of God? She's the mother of Jesus, but she can't be the mother of God. And we say it every time in the Hail Mary, Holy Mary, Mother of God. But a lot of our non-Catholic Christian brothers and sisters would never say that Mary is the mother of God. Well, this is a situation. Mary is the mother of Jesus, right? Right?
Yes.
Jesus is God, right?
Yes.
Is Jesus the Trinity?
Yes.
No. You're all excommunicated. You're all heretics. What is the Trinity? The Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Three persons in one God. Three persons in one God. Remember, St. Patrick explained it so simply with the shamrock, the little plant with three leaves, all individual leaves, but connected to one stem. And if you take one leaf away, pull it off, the whole shamrock will die. Because even though the three leaves are individual, they're completely dependent upon one another for their life. The stem is their unified Godhead, their Godness. The three leaves are the three persons. Very simple explanation. So, Jesus is the second person of the Trinity. He is God. The first person of the Trinity is the Father. He is God. The third person of the Trinity is the Holy Spirit. He is God. All three are God, but there's only one God. Because even though you have three leaves in the shamrock, there's only one plant, one shamrock. So we do not believe that Mary is the mother of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. She's not the mother of the Trinity. She is the mother of Jesus, who is the second person of the Trinity. But since the second person of the Trinity is God, just as the Father is God and the Holy Spirit is God, we can't say that Mary is the mother of Jesus, the human being, but not the mother of Jesus, who is God, because you can't take Jesus and divide him into two halves. His two natures, a human being and a divine being, are in one person. Jesus did not have a split personality. He was not two people in one. He was one person. So Mary is the mother of the whole Jesus. And if Jesus is God, she is mother of Jesus, who is God and man. So we can say that Mary is the mother of God. We could be more specific, perhaps, and say, Holy Mary, mother of God the Son. But when St. Thomas recognized Jesus after he put his finger in the holes in Jesus' hands and his hand in Jesus' side, remember that story? What did Thomas say? My Lord and my God. He didn't say, my Lord and my God the Son, the second person of the Blessed Trinity. So if Thomas could say, my Lord and my God, and address Jesus, and if Mary was his mother, and is his mother still, then we can say Mary is the mother of God. She is the mother of my Lord and God, right? We don't say Mary's the mother of my Lord and God, the second person of the Blessed Trinity. It's too long to say. And we're supposed to know what we mean. So the virgin birth, then the divine maternity, the motherhood of God, put together. The last of the doctrines of Our Lady is the Assumption. The Assumption of Mary into heaven, body and soul. Again, how this happened exactly, we don't know. We don't know how the resurrection of Jesus happened. What we do know is that after Mary lived her earthly life, she died. We never used to say that before. We always said that Mary ended her earthly life, and we kind of didn't know, did she die or did she just kind of disappear? But the Pope, Pope John Paul, last year said that Mary died. He said, we have to believe that Mary died because even Jesus had to die. And if God himself would humble himself to live an earthly life and die an earthly death, his mother couldn't have been spared that herself. So it makes sense. It makes more sense than thinking she just disappeared. Mary lived her life and then she died and she was buried, just like Jesus lived, died, and was buried. And then somehow the apostles discovered, the traditional paintings show them opening her tomb, that Mary's body had disappeared, the same way they had discovered when they went to the tomb of Jesus that his body was no longer there. And the teaching of the churches is that Mary follows Jesus in everything. And just as Jesus' body would not be subjected to decay in the earth because her body had always been free from sin in this life, so, you know, Mary follows Jesus in that she never had experienced decay in her body. Her body went right to heaven. She did not have to wait for the last judgment because there's nothing left to judge. She committed no sins. It says in the Bible, no place, that Mary was assumed into heaven. But it does say this, at the end, after Jesus judges us, everyone will be raised and go to heaven, but each in proper order. And to me, the proper order is that Mary goes first. It would be strange to think that Mary would just sit in the crowd among us and wait her place in line to go into heaven. She kept her body and soul free from sin, using God's grace all her life to make the right choices. She alone, of all human beings, never chose to disobey God. She needs to be the first in line. She is the human being we can be proudest of. Not Michael Jordan, not John Glenn, not even Pope John Paul or Mother Teresa. The human being we are proudest of is Mary of Nazareth, the mother of Jesus, the mother of God. So the church has always said Jesus couldn't wait for her to come to heaven till the end of the world. Jesus brought her first. And what does that have to do with us? It's a reminder that we will all go to live with God in heaven one day with our bodies as well as our souls. See, when we die, our soul goes to God. Our body stays here on earth, buried, cremated, buried at sea, whatever happens to us. At the end of the world, when Christ comes back to the earth, all the bodies will be raised. This columbarium, this shrine you have outside the church with the ashes of loved ones, all of a sudden you will not need the little photographs anymore because you will see your loved ones again in the flesh, young and beautiful and strong and living forever. And this is the promise that we say every Sunday in the Creed. We look for the resurrection of the dead and the life of the world to come. We're looking for it. We're waiting for it. Not just the resurrection of our souls, but the resurrection of our bodies. And because it is this body that we have right now that God has given to us in this life with this soul, we don't believe in reincarnation. We do not believe that our one soul moves into several bodies, animals, humans, even inanimate things. We believe that God gives us this one body and this one soul. Because if we believed that we had several lives with one soul, then we'd have five bodies and one soul. And which one gets to go to heaven? The prettiest? No, we only have one body and one soul. Mary had one body and one soul. Someday we will see one another again. Heaven is going to be like a huge Marian conference. Except we won't be tired, we won't be bored, we won't be hot, and we will know and love everyone. And we will just be so anxious to be with everyone. And we will see no longer a statue of Mary, but the real Mary. And we will instantly recognize her, and she will know us if we have lived as her children on earth in these bodies. Now that brings me to the next thing. We've gone through the four dogmas, the Immaculate Conception, the Virgin Birth, the Divine Maternity, and the Assumption.